the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Gas Talk, the FC Tokyo podcast by the fans, for the fans. I'm Ben Maxwell, joined by Dan Orlowitz. Dan, up the gas.
Up the gas, Ben. How are you?
I'm absolutely terrific. And, well, as tempting as it is to bring back an old favourite and talk about FC Tokyo for an hour.
I don't want to set the world on fire.
And welcome to Chaos Energy J-League. Ben Maxwell and Dan Orlowitz with you. Dan, how's it going?
The world's on fire, Ben, but how about those goals?
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk podcast, third time lucky. I'm Ben Maxwell. Unfortunately, Sam Robson is unable to join me this week, but you've already heard from my partner in crime on this episode. Dan Orlowitz from the Japan Times is with me. Dan, how are you?
I'm good, Ben. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. And I hope that all that will come out as it's sounded in my brain in the build-up to this episode. Hopefully it's worked out okay. But anyway, yeah, we're here to chat about what went on over the weekend in J1 Match Day 17. Before we do that, though, Dan, it would be remiss of me not to ask you about, general goings-on in J-League Corona Chaos Energy times. I guess a fairly significant event over the past weekend was the slight easing of attendance restrictions across the league.
Yes, that's right. Based on the government's guidelines, both the J-League and NPB, Nippon Professional Baseball, relaxed their attendance caps. So NPB went straight to about 50%. Of capacity. I think they might have had a bit of variation depending on the circumstances of their stadiums. The J-League is doing things in a more staggered way. The max cap is 50%, but for the larger stadiums in the league, which is a lot of them, the cap is 30%. Additionally, some clubs, such as FC Tokyo, are going to stick with the old cap of 5,000 until the end of the month and then start raising their limits from October. And given that we're only approaching round 18, October doesn't sound like there's much time, but we still have 17 rounds to go, and there's still a lot of football to get in, so we're going to see some bigger and bigger crowd numbers as the weeks go on.
Yeah, most definitely. So across the top flight over the weekend, yeah, there was a huge variance in the numbers from Sapporo at 2 o'clock on Saturday. They hosted a Gumba Osaka. There were just under 3,000 at Atsubetsu. I can't blame people for not going to the football on a nice mid-September afternoon up in Hokkaido. But anyway, that's by the by. Also, on Saturday night at Kashiwa, there were 2,700 to watch Reysol and Hiroshima. But yes, over 11,000, almost 12,000, in fact, at the Toyota Stadium in Nagoya to watch Grampus host Vissel. So I guess, it's very much a club-by-club decision at the moment, Dan, and they're all kind of playing it by ear and seeing how things go.
I do think that each club has different circumstances. Those limits are the upper limits, and they can set them lower based on things like what the layout of the stadium is, what local authorities are comfortable with, because in the end, these are the J-League's guidelines, and clubs have to follow whatever the local municipality tells them they can do. So if a certain city or prefecture caps them at 30% or 20%, then that's what they're going to follow. You have a situation like Urawa Reds, for example. They had a little over 6,000, about 6,300 in on Sunday. That stadium, even at 30%, can fit about 22,000. A lot. That's a lot. But if you're having 20,000 people come to Saitama Stadium, that puts a lot of stress on the Saitama railway line. You know, you can't socially distance on that train. Coming back from a game, even with 20,000 or, you know, 15 or 10,000 people, so it's understandable that each club is going to look at their circumstances and figure out what's best. And I think that that's smart. I think that as we've talked about in previous episodes, the league has been very prudent in its decision making, and they're going to continue to do so.
Fair enough then. So again, just one more before we dive into all of the results from the weekend's J1 action. How do you think everything's been going? I mean, you've been going to stadiums most weekends. Spoiler alert, you didn't on this particular weekend, but yeah, you have been for basically since you've been allowed to go again. So how do you think everything's progressed, and this increase in crowd numbers was a natural progression, do you think, and gradually throughout the second half of the season, you think we'll get stadium capacity increased, maybe not week by week, but perhaps month by month?
Yeah, it's going well so far. We haven't had any cluster infections among the fans. In fact, as far as we know, more J-League players have been infected than J-League fans.
Right, that's interesting.
Of course, we don't know that for sure, but at least there have been no cluster infections that have affected any of the clubs, and that would force any of the clubs to take measures such as having to disinfect the stands, which of course they're already doing, or restricting attendance even further. The J-League and MPB did put out a joint statement today, basically saying that as these crowds get bigger, they have to take very strict precautions and enforce that these guidelines and rules that they have in place to keep those crowds increasing in size. So just telling people to wear their masks, not to shout, but to keep clapping to support the players, avoid groups, stay physically distanced when you're eating, and try to avoid long conversations. And that's how it's going to be, I think, through the end of the season. I think that if cases don't jump in Japan in the next couple of weeks, if we manage to avoid a really bad third wave, then maybe we'll be at 50% across the board by December. But I don't think that we're going to have cheering this year. We'll see how things go about having cheering at the beginning of next season. I think that's going to take time once the vaccines and such become available. So it's going to be a process.
All right, then. I very much appreciate you bringing us up to date with all of that. And I'm sure the listeners echo my sentiments there, Dan. Thank you very much for that. All right, well, let's get on to matters on the pitch over the weekend. Normally, we would start with the leaders, Kawasaki, of course. But on this particular match day 17, I don't think there's any question that the biggest clash on paper was the Cerezo Osaka hosting Kashima Antlers. And speaking of crowd numbers, there were 6,800 in at the Yanmar Stadium for this one, and it was an absolutely terrific looking clash on paper. Cerezo had won six straight since their 5-2 battering at the hands of Kawasaki a month ago, and of course they had pulled to within 5 points of Frontale with their 1-0 win at Kobe on Wednesday night. That result, of course, achieved with playing with 10 men for basically the last hour after Ken Tokara's straight red card. But their visitors, Kashima, had won 5 straight themselves and were unbeaten in 6 coming into this one. The clash between the teams in 2nd and 5th in the table. And, well, I guess the quality of goals wasn't particularly outstanding, Dan. I mean, the Kashima's 2 goals, they won't leave lead off their season highlights DVD by any stretch of the imagination, but at the end of the day, Antlers have claimed a sixth straight win themselves and snapped Cerezo's winning streak with Juan Alano and Everaldo netting either side of Bruno Mendes's equaliser. So for Antlers, they just keep carrying on. Dan, Cerezo, though, they'll be hugely frustrated here, especially how resilient they've been in recent weeks to come from behind 9 minutes before half-time through Bruno Mendes's equaliser, but then to lose the advantage again basically as soon as the second half kicked off will be hugely frustrating for them.
Yeah, I think that given the current circumstances, there's only really two or three clubs that could possibly catch up to Kawasaki, and that's Cerezo, Tokyo, and Nagoya. I don't really think that Antlers have it in them. But then again, I mean, they are the most successful club in J-League history. We did expect this year to be a rebuilding season for Antlers, and we didn't really expect Zago to do this well in his first J-League season, but he's getting it done. I mean, they were very inconsistent to start off, but wow, do they look good these days. And it's just Cerezo played them at the wrong time, and now they're 8 points back.
Yeah, it's for fans of a title race. Obviously Cerezo's loss will hit home very, very hard because obviously in terms of points accrued so far, but also in terms of the consistency of their performances, they had looked the most likely challengers with Tokyo especially dropping a couple of games at home against bottom half teams that ordinarily if you're gonna be in the thick of a title race, then you have to be winning those sort of games. So, Tokyo and Nagoya have just been as inconsistent as Tokyo pretty much in the last month or so. So, Cerezo were our big hope. And as I said, they've come from behind. They've gone down to 10 men. They've managed to work their way across the line in so many games in the past month. But two scrappy goals from Antlers. Juan Alano's just crossing the line before it was hacked away out of the net. And then, Everaldo in the right place at the right time. But ultimately, I guess it's reward for Antlers and the quality they've shown in the past month themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the first goal, especially, as you mentioned, it's not that that's a bit on Cerezo's defending. There's a lot of, sliding around in the box and that sort of stuff. But I think that those, especially with as many games as we've had this season, you got to find the wins where you can, because there's really no time to, to refocus and reflect on these games. I think that's a very interesting dynamic of the season. And I think that actually suits Kashima better in a way, because they've always been a club they believe in the Kashima way, in the Antlers sort of iron curtain philosophy. That's what they do. And they're really good at it. And they showed that this weekend.
Yes, indeed. So next up for Cerezo is a trip to the capital on the Wednesday night to face FC Tokyo in match day 18. So that's the third hosting second. And obviously Kawasaki will be hoping for a repeat of the 0-0 draw these two teams played out in match day 9 at the start of August, because that will give them a chance to extend their own lead that, as Dan has mentioned, is back out to 8 points. Cerezo dropped those points at home to Antlers on Saturday night. Frontale, they were fully aware of that, obviously, when they travelled to Saitama Stadium on Sunday to face Urawa. And, Dan, as regulation, a 3-0 as I think we're ever going to see from... is it too early to call them the champions-elect?
If you want to jinx it, it's not too early. but this is, as you know... This is the J-League. This isn't just the J-League. This is Chaos Energy J-League. The only way that Kawasaki can screw this up is if they sort of get lost inside their own head. And I don't see it. Ben, Kawasaki right now have a plus 39 goal difference. Mm-hmm. That's more goals than any team in the league has scored. Not just the J1, but the J2 and the J3.
Okay, you go big there. You've won up to Sean Carroll. I love it. Yeah,
I should actually. I mean, Sean was I think the first person to sort of mention that stat, but I did just go and double check the J2 because I figured, well, surely whoever's leading the J2 at the moment, which is Kitakyushu, you know, surely someone's had a few 5-0 games because of course it's the J2. But nope, that's more points. Yeah, 39 points. That's there's only two teams other than Kawasaki. There's only two teams in the league that have more points than 39. Like, what can you do with that? What can you do against this club with such a deep roster, so many good players? How many bad players do Kawasaki have? Really, like. We can talk about the bad players Tokyo has.
That's a particular hobby of mine, yes.
That is a particular hobby. We could dedicate an hour of Gas Talk to that. We can talk about, bad players that each team has. But really, even Kawasaki's bench, even if you're going all the way down the line, like, the worst they have is still good. And with 5 substitutes per game, Toru Oniki can afford to put Mitoma on the bench and send him out as super sub. He can afford to send, when you can send out Mitoma, Nakamura, and Ienaga as subs and still have 2 more substitutes to make. What is that? Like, it's not fair. So, yeah, I think it's probably Kawasaki's league to lose. We've said that before. We said that about Tokyo last year. We said that about Hiroshima 2 years ago. We probably said that about Kashima 3 years ago. And obviously this is different, but they're very good. I've watched Kawasaki play several times this year, and they're as good, if not better than the two title-winning teams in 2017 and 2018.
Yeah, I mean, to me, they just appear a team on an absolute mission, and I certainly take your point where Hiroshima and FC Tokyo have had the significant leads. Deep enough into the season where we were expecting them to go on with it. I think. You yourself and myself as hardened FC Tokyo supporters, we probably at the back of our minds knew that our team wasn't going to do it last year, but that's by the by. But this team is absolutely clicking on all cylinders, no question. I mean, a loss to Nagoya, then a draw with Kobe, but since then they had won 4 straight, scoring 16 and letting in just 4. Well, yeah, it's obviously 19-4 now after this 3-0 win. And I tell you what, if your right back is bobbing up with a volley into the top corner from the edge of the box, then there's literally no hope for the rest of us, I don't think. And how about the audacity of Akihiro Ienaga to just flick the ball up into the air for Miki Yamane to volley into the top bin in the 37th minute? Absolutely terrific.
I mean, Kyle, when you can score goals, like, here's the thing. When you can score goals like Kawasaki can score goals, you don't have to defend. And yet, here we are. They've only allowed 16 goals this season, and that's tied for lowest in the league with Cerezo and Nagoya. But they've still scored twice as many goals as either Cerezo or Nagoya. So, like, what are we talking about here? Like, this is insane. And even if you give Nagoya 2 wins, because they've got 2-ish games in hand to get up to 18. Give Nagoya 2 wins. Fine. They're up to 36 points. Tokyo have played an extra game, and so they're at 35. I don't know who's catching up in these next 16 fixtures, especially if the ACL does manage to happen and Tokyo have to... I mean, I went over this in my column published in the Japan Times late last week, but if Tokyo have to split their squad and send whoever they're sending to Doha and keep sort of the scrubs here to play out the rest of the league, they're not catching up to Kawasaki. What are we talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't want to jinx anything. Sorry, Neil Debnam, for, basically going on about it on a weekly basis. But, yeah, with the each extra stunning performance, it looks more and more likely. Obviously, yeah, Cerezo had... I think it's remarkable, really, and it's a credit to Cerezo that they pulled to within 5 points on Wednesday night, Dan. But, now that it's back out to eight, well, yeah, I mean, it looks... can you see Kawasaki dropping 8 points the rest of the way? I mean, it's obviously they will, but basically every other team is going to have to be perfect, and it's basically in this season of all seasons, it's just impossible to see.
They haven't even dropped 8 points in 18 games. They've dropped 7 points so far. Seven. That's ridiculous. We are all witnesses. It is unfortunate. I mean, it's really disappointing that more fans don't get to watch this in person, and it's disappointing that we've lost the atmosphere that makes Kawasaki games, especially home games, such a joy to watch. They're going to have the advantage of possibly playing at 50% capacity or more. When Tokyo go over there for the Tamagawa Classico, both for the Vaughan Cup and then for the return leg in the league.
Can't wait for those two games. Yeah, absolutely.
Can't wait for those two games. You know, Tokyo supporter, I think my credentials are pretty well established. I mean, Kawasaki have one of the best fan experience, match day experiences in the J League, bar few, and possibly even bar none. I mean, it's just an experience. So it's a shame that they're doing so well when all of this is happening. But it is what it is, and I think that it does show you how just good a team they are, and how good a team they've been in the last four seasons, and how lucky we are to get a chance to watch it.
Yeah, most definitely. So another extra special performance from Frontale at Reds on Sunday evening. And back out to 8 points clear at the top of the table for the leaders. They have two Kanagawa derbies coming up in the next week. It's Yokohama FC at home on Wednesday, then Shonan away on Sunday before they have a full week to prepare for Cerezo Osaka away in match day 20. So that's looming on the horizon, and of course the form book goes out the window in derbies, etc., etc. But Yokohama FC, well, that should at least be an entertaining game at Todoroki on Wednesday night. Heaven help Yokohama FC, but we shall see what sort of a fight they put up. And then Shonan away, and Cerezo, we presume, will still be in second place by the time that fixture comes around in match day 20. So another top of the table clash, and we'll see how Cerezo get on. Okay, well, also on Sunday, Dan and I were watching along with interest as the FC Tokyo hosted Sendai. The Gasmen, of course, were coming off that disappointing home loss to Oita on Wednesday night, but they restored a little bit of pride with a 1-0 home win over their visitors, thanks to a 13th minute goal from Hirotaka Mita, who, of course, had originally left FC Tokyo and spent 2 years with the Sendai before then moving on to Kobe and returning to Tokyo last year. So this was a little bit of a throwback, Dan. And speaking of Gastelk, very much a throwback. But I think we both remember when Mita was something for FC Tokyo. Then he went away. We're all very excited when he came back, but he hasn't really made as much of an impact as we might have hoped. But this was an excellent reminder of what he is capable of at times.
Yeah, it was vintage Mita. It was a well hit goal. It's a great run. It was the kind of goal that really does show sort of Tokyo's potential. I think they played well. They played pretty well in this game, but the problem. If we were to contrast Tokyo and Kawasaki, I think that Tokyo are very good at defending one-goal leads. They're not going to jump out and score four goals in the first half. Kawasaki are that sort of team. And I think that that's really the difference this season, because you can only fight back for so long. I think that just Tokyo style is a bit more... exhausting is the word I'm looking for, than Kawasaki's. And I think that they were put to the test. I don't think that Vigalta should be ashamed of their performance at all. And yeah, I think that especially in the with the loss of two solid players, Hashimoto and Miroya, players have to step up for FC Tokyo, and I think that that's what we saw on Sunday.
Yeah, not at their best, but yeah, I think a good goal to get them going, and then they were able to hang on at times, but yeah, ultimately deserved the 3 points. And I mean, yeah, obviously this is the sort of game they'd been losing in recent times. Of course, the really, really disappointing display against Tosu a few weeks back before Tosu's corona-enforced hiatus, and then, of course, Oita on Wednesday. It was, hugely frustrating and also controversy-tinged. And I guess if you're a Sendai supporter and you're a bit of a pedant, you could also say that, yeah, this was controversy-tinged, as it did appear, or the ball might not have stopped rolling before Mita took the free kick that ultimately led to him scoring the goal after Dialton was fouled near halfway. But, from a Tokyo perspective, that's the stupidest rule in football to begin with. So, Mita took the free kick, played it forward to Kyosuke Tagawa, and then took the return pass before firing home from the edge of the area. And one thing I noticed in particular this week, Dan, I obviously haven't watched Sendai a massive amount in terms of full games this season, but the DAZN commentator was very intent on calling the goalkeeper, who I've been calling a Jakub Slovic, slow week, like he's having a slow week. I don't know if that's to do with the way it's written out in katakana, but that certainly took a lot of getting used to my ears. Slow week.
It's interesting because the katakana is written out with a V, the name is written Slowik.
Of course, I'm no expert in Polish, but for me that's Slavic for me. But yeah.
Yeah, in the Japanese, it is written out suo
week.
but it's written out. If you were to romanize the katakana, it would be suwobiku. Uh-huh. And this is, I'm sure the listeners who don't live in Japan are thrilled by us playing Hangman with this goalkeeper's name, but it's just a weird language quirk, and maybe someone said something. I'd have to go back and listen to it again, and probably worth asking a friend of the pod, Ben Mabley, what he thinks about that, because I think he would know sort of the process of what happens when a player's pronunciation gets adjusted mid-season.
To be perfectly honest, Sam's not here to slate to Shun Nagasawa, so I didn't really have any other talking points around Sendai. So I did notice the commentator was very determined to say slow week every time he was talking about our Jakub. So anyway, that's by the by. We might get to the bottom of that in weeks to come. But anyway, for Tokyo Tokyo, yeah, a 1-0 home win on Sunday. Back to Saturday then, and a fourth-placed Nagoya rebounded from, they're rebounding and then they're winning and then they're rebounding and then they're winning. They're very, very inconsistent of late, but they remained a fourth in the table after a 2 Mukanazaki penalties gave them a come-from-behind win at home at the Toyota Stadium over Vissel Kobe. Hotaru Yamaguchi had lobbed Kobe into a 15th-minute lead. Mitch Langerak very much stopping to admire Yamaguchi's shot over his head and into the net. But, Kanazaki grabbed the first of his 2 goals from the spot 3 minutes before half-time, and then 11 minutes into the second half after Naoki Maeda was chopped down near the byline. Kanazaki scored from the spot for the second time in the game. So, it's really hard to get a read on the Grampus, obviously, Dan. They're the only team to have beaten Kawasaki this season. But, since that epic result, they've dropped tons of points themselves. But I guess a win here after coming from behind is positive and keeps them, I guess, slightly in the hunt. Well, definitely for an ACL spot, as you said earlier, with a couple of games in hand on the teams above them.
Yeah, I think that especially going into the season, we didn't really give them much of a rosy outlook, considering that I think a lot of J-Watchers are torn with what they think about sort of friend of Gas Talk, Massimo Ficcadenti. Mm. But he's doing well. I think Adrian would say that having Joe off the team has sort of helped in a way. I think that sort of could have something to do with it. But overall, the defense has stabilized. As I pointed out earlier, they're tied with Setoso and Kawasaki for the best defense in the league. Mitch Langerak has been on fire. Obviously, he doesn't stop them all, but he's had a number of amazing saves this season, penalties, big shots, you name it. I do think that Nagoya could use a bit more scoring aptitude. You know, Kanazaki's doing okay, but they're still mid-table, about ninth or so in terms of goals scored. They're only at 26. If you think about it, if they were up to... Yeah, if they were up to 30 goals scored, 30-31, they'd be fifth best in the league and probably would have a few more points than they do and maybe even be in the ACL spot with those games in hand. So they're interesting. They're fun. I don't think that they're going to really put pressure on Kawasaki, but I think they can definitely put pressure on second or third place.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, then. So they are the results for, including Kashima, of course, the top 5 teams in the table after match day 17. So we'll be back after a quick hit of music to wrap up the other 5 games from match day 17. Welcome back. 5 games left to review from match day 17, and we'll begin at Hitachi Dai, the clash between Kashiwa Reysol and Sanfrecce Hiroshima, the teams coming into this match day in 7th and 10th, respectively, in the table. So very bunched together in the table, these 2 teams. And I guess at the end of the day, Dan, they've cancelled each other out. Douglas Vieira put the visitors into an early lead, but just before halftime, Kengo Kitazuma equalised, and I guess the major surprise from this game is that Michael Olunga didn't score.
Yeah, and I was actually thinking about covering this game. I sort of chose not to because I had some stuff to work on, and I probably would have been pretty pissed if I had gone all the way out to Kashiwa and not gotten an Olunga goal. So, works out for me. Doesn't work out so well for Kashiwa, who I'm sure would have loved full 3 points. But they did well to get the draw, but Kashiwa are sort of one of those teams. I mean, aside from Olunga, they've been so inconsistent this season. Even with some of the performances he's put in, they're still dropping points left and right, and I don't know. I think that they're just having a tough time of things. I think their defense could afford to be much sharper. And this was a very mid-table clash, even though Kasho are in the top six, and that's just sort of how it is these days. And Hiroshima are just sort of a team that are completely falling off the radar this season. There's just not that much to talk about.
Yeah, I agree. It's they've obviously started the last two seasons so well, Hiroshima, but they hadn't been as easy on the eye as others. So I guess, yeah, they're just kind of fading into obscurity this season, which is a bit of a shame. They've obviously got half a season to try and make more of an impression on us and indeed work their way up the table. But, they are the very definition of it after, they've played only 16 games, of course, and others have played as many as 19. But, Sanfrecce 10th in the table after this draw. Yeah, Racel did eke up a spot to 6th. As Dan has mentioned there, and they're now level on points with the Yokohama F Marinos, who were edged up to 27 themselves after a 3-1 away win over Tosu on Saturday. Tosu, their post-corona bubble is now well and truly burst after, a loss on Wednesday as well. Not for the first time this month. Eric got Yokohama F. Marinos off to a lightning start with a terrific goal in just the first minute of the game. Then he set up Junior Santos for his heavily deflected second in the 13th minute. Daichi Hayashi got one back for Tosu in the 21st minute because he always scores these days. But Marcos Junior basically wrapped up the points in the 34th minute. And so for basically the second game in a week, F. Marinos were able to coast through the last hour. Obviously, Dan, we've said it numerous times in the past month or so, and I've already written them off. As good as they are capable of playing Yokohama, they currently sit 20 points behind the leaders, having played a game more. So it's just not going to happen for them again in their title defence. But they're obviously as dangerous as anyone in the league. And, I mean, you wouldn't put it past them to finish second, say. But, it's just too far, too big a hill for them to climb at the moment, isn't it?
I mean, second is still, at this point, 12 points back and a game in hand.
Yeah.
So that's a tall order. I think that, going back to what I mentioned about Tokyo and the split squad, I think that if you're Yokohama at this point, you're focusing on the Levan Cup and you're focusing on the ACL, both of which are still very winnable. If the ACL happens. But I think that if they do end up going, I think that that is a thing where you let the under-18s play the rest of imagine letting the under-18s play out the rest of the J-League season.
Yeah.
I mean, it's dumb. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. But, if you're Yokohama, I don't see why not. Let the kids play, and that's sort of a good way of seeing, it's a good, an amazing audition for those kids, for that team, and you throw your best players into Asia, and you see, and you hope for the best. I think that's all they can do at this point. Once you get to the end of the season. So I think they still got a chance to win something. It's just not going to be the league.
No, agreed there. So, yeah, I mean, what are the percentage chances you think of the East Zone ACL games being played in their hubs or whatever they're terming it? Obviously, the West games are happening. They've already started. So the AFC's intention is to get the East Zone played as well, obviously. But how realistic is that as we record on Monday night on the 21st of September?
I think the odds of the East Zone happening, the AFC would like us to think that they're happening until they're not happening, so which is, of course, the position that they sort of have to take as tournament organizers and as an organization beholden to a variety of stakeholders, both commercial and otherwise. Realistically, personally, in my heart of hearts, I would peg it somewhere between 10 and 15% right now. I think those are sort of the realistic odds. Anything could happen. The J League is supposed to put out its schedule for the rest of the season soon-ish. I don't think it's supposed to be on this coming Thursday, but I think that they need to have it by October 2nd?
Yeah, 2nd of October sounds right to me, yeah.
The 2nd of October is I think, that when they've said they're going to announce it. They're having their executive committee meet this Thursday, the 24th of September, and they're going to debate everything, and we'll see. But, Yokohama, of the three ACL clubs, realistically, FC Tokyo have the best chance of winning the league.
Hmm.
Might be a small chance, but they're Yokohama aren't going to catch up. Thistle Kobe sure as hell aren't going to catch up. So there's a scenario in which, who knows? I went over the two team scenario in my column, and it's just, I don't even know where you'd begin to not just justify that as a decision as a professional club, but how you'd implement that in a way that just doesn't tilt the integrity of the domestic league into absurdity.
Mm.
You know, you can't have the last 6 weeks of the season potentially defined by three teams throwing on their reserves and under 18s. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And if Tokyo have their under 23, well, no, they don't have their under 23 squad. What am I talking about? They did at some point, but if they play the reserves, what are we talking about? I mean, this is just sort of the depressing Chaos Energy J League part of the show. But I don't know. I've heard rumblings, from people who talk to me about such things, that people aren't optimistic about the East Zone going off. And that's... we'll see. We didn't think that the West Zone would go off either, but but for the grace of God, go all the teams except the one that got kicked out because they couldn't make the flight.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. We might end up with a situation where the only the West Zone gets played, and the AFC has to decide whether they're going to give the trophy to one of those teams, because there's still so many logistical things to sort out, and they don't need me to tell them that before all these clubs from the East Zone trying to congregate in these different hubs and then try and get, six or eight group stage games played in, the space of a week or 10 days or something. So, Chaos Energy Asian Champions League, very much for definite in the works. But, we've got three games left to go. And we'll head up to Sapporo for the previously mentioned 2 p.m. kickoff on Saturday at Subetsu. Sapporo, of course, finally snapped their winless run the previous Wednesday, but they were unable to build on that and suffered a 1-0 home defeat at the hands of Gumba Osaka, who stayed in ninth in the table, despite taking all 3 points home with them, thanks to Kazuma Watanabe's goal in the 78th minute. He followed up after his initial shot had been saved by Takanori Sugino off the post in the Sapporo goal. Hiroki Fujiharu had crossed for Watanabe. A good save from Sugino, but yeah, Watanabe was in the right place at the right time to knock in the rebound. So, well, yeah, Dan, I don't know if we have an awful amount to say about these two teams, but obviously an impressive away win for Gamba that they'll be very happy with at the end of the day, having come off the back of two straight defeats themselves.
Yeah, who's a goal? Is it a good goal? Not you know, not really a stunning goal, but you know, it was good in the sense that Watanabe had the presence of mind to finish that when there are some goalkeepers who might, or excuse me, some players who might not hit that correctly, especially on the on the rebound of your own header. So you know, good for him. And just it's disappointing that Sapporo don't really have it together this season. And that's it. I don't think that they're gonna fall into deep enough a hole to get into the relegation race that doesn't exist this yeah. season, but you know, it's a lost season for them.
Indeed, indeed. All right, next to another 1-0 result. This was a home win for Oita over Yokohama FC. These two teams were also quite close together in the table at kickoff. Oita in 12th and their visitors Yokohama FC in 14th. And this was ultimately decided by Tatsuya Tanaka, who scored Oita's second at FC Tokyo on a Wednesday night, and indeed scored for the third straight game here, an excellent winner in the 38th minute. Yeah, and that was it for Trinidad. So a very enjoyable week for Trinidad, and indeed a third straight win. They are now 4 unbeaten, and well, yeah, they had obviously suffered a little bit through second season syndrome in the early stages of the season, but look like they've righted the ship, Dan. And as I said in the Patreon exclusive mini pod on Wednesday, well, it was published on Thursday, they were decent enough value, despite how hard done to I felt as an FC Tokyo supporter at the end of that game. I mean, Trinidad did deserve credit for the way they travelled up to Tokyo and took it to our gas men, and well, yeah, another impressive home win for them. So they're they're right back on track, I'd say.
They're on track, and I'll tell you, Yokohama are no slouches this season. They may be in 14th, but they're doing well. They're doing much better than any of us could have imagined them doing coming into the season. Even now, if there was a hypothetical relegation dogfight, they would still be 5 points above safety. And I think most of us probably picked them to finish at least in 17th. They're fun to watch. I saw them, I saw their loss against FC Tokyo the other round, and it was a totally fine game. I think they've got a lot of potential. I think they're going to be an interesting club to see once they unload the salaries of certain 40 and 50 plus year old players who aren't really playing much anyway.
Yeah, probably in about 5 years' time when they get around to doing that, Dan. But yeah, point well made. And they have been easy on the eye for large parts of this season. And unfortunately for them, they were unable to get the result at Trinita in the other game played on Sunday. But so we'll finish up with the Battle of the Bottom that took place at the BMW Stadium, Hiratsuka, on Saturday evening. It was previously second bottom hosting Shimizu S-Pulse, but S-Pulse rose to the giddy heights of 16th after a 3-0 away win. All the goals coming in the second half, when S-Pulse have basically been doing all their damage on the score sheet. Only this time they didn't have to come from behind or score a mere consolation. They were coming at things with the score at still at 0-0. Carlinhos Bundy trundled in a volley 9 minutes into the second half. Then Dutra scored their second 4 minutes from time. And Dan, as a Tokyo supporter, I still will never forget Dutra and the role he played with Kyoto on the final day of the 2010 season. But one of these years I'll forget that and forgive Dutra for that. Anyway, Dutra hit the post deep into stoppage time, and Kenta Nishizawa was a Johnny on the spot to fire in S Pulse's third. So, it's been a pretty diabolical season for both of these teams. But for S Pulse, they'd been on a massive, massive winless run, a run of losses, Dan. So to go away from home and to right that ship somewhat, that will give Peter Klimovsky and his players a lot of heart, I would suggest.
Yeah, I think that he has dealt with far more, much, much greater of a struggle than Ange did his first season. And I think we've all sort of looked at Ange's year one as Peter's year, as a template for Peter's year one. And that hasn't really come to pass in terms of the quality on the pitch. But the players, when you hear them, they do feel confident in the philosophy and in what they are doing in training and how everything is coming together. So they could be just a piece or two away from being a decent mid-table team. I think time will tell, and hopefully the club sticks with him. And it'd be a shame to throw this year away and start fresh with a new manager next year. I think that when you're embarking on projects like these, you do have to be resolute and be patient.
Yeah, most definitely. So it was, 7 straight losses and 8 without a win for S-Boss before they rocked up to Shonan. So, great to get a win and to get a clean sheet as well, because they've been as rare as hen's teeth for S-Pulse this season. In fact, only their second of the season so far. Their first was the last game that they had not lost away at Sendai in match day 10. So, S-Pulse bringing the 3 points home with them. And, that result obviously sent Shonan back to the foot of the table. A very rough season so far for Belmare. And, we'll see how these two teams go in the second half of the season, because it's so hard to keep track of, isn't it, Dan? You would say that for most teams it's halfway through the season, but as we've said, the three ACL clubs have all played 19 games so far, but then there's a plenty who have only played 16 due to basically Tosu related postponements. And indeed, Sagan have only played 14 games themselves so far, so it's really hard to keep track of. There are games coming chunky and rapid all the way through the month of September and October, of course. We'll just try and keep track of it all. And you've got so much to do at the Japan Times, not only covering football, of course, but other sports as well. So, it must be great to have sports back to begin with. But, there's so much for you to keep up with.
Yeah, it's sort of feast or famine these days, especially because, the Olympics obviously didn't happen, and Japan is mostly restricted to domestic sporting events for the time being, although I think we are getting one of the judo Grand Slam events in December. Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. Actually, the other day, on Thursday, I took over the paper's Instagram account, and I actually went to the sumo grand tournament and covered that for a day. And if you think that the situation in some of these J-League stadiums is grim, sumo is very grim. I think that Yogoku Kokugi-kan fits normally a little over 10 or 11,000 fans. They've capped it at 2,500, and there could have been more than 1,500, if that, in the building. I don't know if the Japan Sumo Association keeps track of it, but it was pretty dire, and it was fun to watch. I hadn't gotten tickets to a basho since I was a language student back in 2009, maybe 2008. Right. So it's been quite a while. It was cool to cover it, and I've got a sort of a photo essay showing what that is like coming up sometime this week. It'll be on our website and in print at some point. We're sort of working out the details, but it was interesting just having covered so many J League games this season to see how the other sports are dealing with it. And it's weird. It's going to be weird for the rest of the year. The B League is kicking off in a couple of weekends, and we're all enduring. That's just how the Japanese sports world is dealing for the next few months.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, more power to you, mate, with keeping up with everything. Unfortunately, for us here at JTalk Towers, it's all gotten a bit too much for us. So if you're a patron of the podcast, you might have noticed that nothing has popped into your inbox in terms of polls for J1 and J2 games that we want you to vote on for us to watch on Wednesday night. That's because with Sam unavailable this week, John, Stewart and myself have come to the conclusion that, we're just far too fatigued at the moment to do another midweek special episode, either via Zoom or audio podcast. So unfortunately, there will not be a special collaboration episode coming after the midweek's J1 match day 18 and whatever match day they're up to in J2. But there is more to come from John and Stewart, I'm reliably informed, later on in the week. And you've probably already checked out Stewart's offerings that have been posted on Monday night by the time you listen to this episode. But anyway, there are two the match days to come in J1 before Big Pod will be back early next week. In Wednesday's match day 18, obviously the pick of the fixtures on paper is third placed FC Tokyo hosting Cerezo Osaka at the Ajinomoto Stadium. As we mentioned, Kawasaki have a Kanagawa derby at home against Yokohama FC that should be entertaining and could be anything in terms of a scoreline. And then match day 19 we played on the weekend, three games on Saturday. Nothing really grabs my attention from those three fixtures. On Sunday, again, it's not the greatest match day on paper. Probably Kashiwa hosting Yokohama F. Marinos is probably the pick of the games and one that you'd want to check out if you had the pick of the fixtures to watch. Frontale are again, as we said, away at Shonan on Sunday in another Kanagawa derby. All right, Dan, it sounds like my voice is about to go, so we might as well leave it there, I think. Thank you very much for stepping into the breach this week. Been terrific to catch up with you and get your thoughts on everything J1, basically halfway through the season. And, we'll look forward to doing so again in the coming weeks.
Absolutely. And, let me say just thinking about it, you listing everything that Stuart and the gang are coming up with for the J2 and J3, you guys are killing it. Amazing job on the JTalk network this season. I talked about on Twitter how impressed I was with the package that you guys put together for all the Patreon subscribers. We came up with Gas Talk as sort of a fun, weird little thing 9 years ago, and how far you've come. It's incredible to watch or to listen to.
Yeah, terrific. Thanks, mate. And you've obviously been one of the driving forces of giving me a nudge in the direction, firstly to start the podcast all those years ago, and then, to actually get onto Patreon and to be able to, do something like that giveaway, which was, obviously, I had the time of my life, actually, getting the cards opened up and getting all the transfer dealings done, which was that was absolutely brilliant fun. So it's been great to get everything out for our patrons to enjoy. Again, with the caveat that unfortunately we can't post to the US and Australia yet, but hope to do so very, very soon. But yeah, thanks for your kind words, and indeed thanks for your nudges along the way, because I don't think we would be where we are without you. But before I get too soppy and my voice really goes properly, thank you very much for your time, mate, and let's do it again soon.
Absolutely.
All right, then, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk Podcast. I'd like to thank Dan Orlowitz for his time, our patrons for their ongoing support, and, of course, you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to wrap up the week's J1 action. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
How realistic is that as we record on Monday night on the 21st?
November.
November?
Surely it's not November already.
The J-Talk Podcast.